ticklish business any way you look at it. Come on, we'll stick together.
It's Ticklish Business, the podcast devoted to honoring and deconstructing the world of classic cinema. As always, I'm your host, Kristen Lopez. Well, April may be over, but that doesn't mean that I can't release an episode late, as William Holden Month concludes a bit later than I anticipated, with guest Diana Bosch joining me once again as we discuss our top three favorite William Holden films. And apologies for the audio quality of my voice, I'm getting over a TCM Film Festival cold, but hopefully that won't derail what I hope is a very, very good episode.
39 years ago this month, we were working in a film together called Golden Boy. And it wasn't going well, because I was going to be replaced. But due to this lovely human being and her interest in understanding and her professional integrity and her encouragement and above all her generosity, I'm here tonight.
Oh, Bill.
William Holden was born William Franklin Beadle Jr. on April 17, 1918. His father was an industrial chemist and his mother was a teacher. At age three, Bill, along with his two brothers, traveled with his parents from their small Illinois town to South Pasadena, California. He attended Pasadena Community College for a time and dabbled in performing radio shows. He eventually turned to Hollywood, making uncredited appearances in the films Prison Farm and Million Dollar Legs. Suffice it to say, I doubt people remember his performances in either of these two features, if they remember the films themselves. In 1939, he auditioned for the role of Joe Bonaparte, the young man torn between his love for music and his skill at boxing, in the feature film Golden Boy. Around this time, the man born William Beadle became William Holden, named for assistant director Harold Winston's ex-wife, Gloria Holden. But as filming on Golden Boy commenced, the director thought Holden wasn't a good fit and demanded he be replaced. Actress Barbara Stanwyck, Holden's co-star in the film, compelled the studio to keep him. And nearly 40 years later, during the 1978 Academy Awards, as you just heard, Holden thanked Stanwyck for saving his career. Golden Boy kickstarted Holden's career as the good boy in dramas like Invisible Stripes, Those Were the Days, and Our Town, films that didn't really highlight Holden's persona or really give him much of a character. And you gotta love watching Bill Holden in period films, because he always just seems too modern.
Hedda Hopper speaking. I'm talking from the bedroom of Norma Desmond. Don't bother with a rewrite, man. Take this direct. Ready? As day breaks over the murder house.
Yes, you'll read the big black headlines about Norma Desmond and this Hollywood scandal. But you'll never read the true story about the rest of us who were part of it. Me, for instance, Joe Gillis, a promising young writer from Dayton, Ohio. And Betty, that nice kid I met at a Hollywood party, who knew nothing about me, but knew what she wanted.
When World War II started, Bill Holden quickly joined up, becoming a second lieutenant in the Air Force, taking a four-year break from filmmaking. When he returned to movies in 1947, his career hadn't really changed that much. He still played many a, quote, smiling Jim in features like Dear Ruth, Apartment for Peggy, and Miss Grant Takes Richmond. Eventually started appearing in westerns like The Man from Colorado and Streets of Laredo. But for all Holden's dabbling, it wasn't until the 1950s that he found the role which cemented his A-list status. Now, if you listen to the Sunset Boulevard episode, then I've already gone into the background of the film. But long story short, Holden, who was a contract player for the studio, received the role of Joe Gillis after star Montgomery Clift dropped the project 2 weeks before principal photography. Though playing the character of Joe in the Hollywood production terrified Holden, it paid off. As star Gloria Swanson said, Holden was, quote, perfection on and off screen. The role secured him an Oscar nomination, though it took three more years for him to finally win the coveted statue.
Stalag 17 was a hellhole where no man ever escaped alive.
One of us is a stoolie, a dirty, stinking stoolie.
One of them a German spy, reporting every move to von Schirbach, the commandant. One of them a hunted fugitive, as the Nazis turned Stalag 17 inside out and upside down to find him. One of them a big-time operator who played the million-to-one shot, tunneling out of Stalag 17.
Just one more word. If I ever run into any of you bums on a street corner,
Just let's pretend we never met before.
Holden became a bona fide movie star in the 1950s, playing many a smooth-talking cynic just trying to get by. In 1953, he finally won an Academy Award, playing a POW in Billy Wilder's wartime comedy Stalag 17. Throughout the decade, he vacillated between romantic leading men, such as in the 1953 comedy Born Yesterday, 1954's Sabrina, and the 1956 feature Love is a Many Splendored Thing. Holden was so ubiquitous that his 1955 appearance on I Love Lucy was an event in itself. But by 57, with the release of The Bridge on the River Kwai, Holden's career had hit its apex. The closing of the 50s saw him struggle publicly with alcoholism, a vice that was rumored to have been exacerbated by his relationship with actress Audrey Hepburn, his co-star in Sabrina. The two had what many presumed was a fairy tale relationship, but Holden's demons, and Hepburn's desire for a family, caused the two to split up, and it's said that Holden never got over her.
Driven to the border by the irresistible thrust of civilization were the remnants of the breed that had made the West wild.
If they move, kill them.
The payrolls were harder to get at. The army rode the railroad now. But there were still a few trails for the kind who'd be cold before they were tamed. They called them the Wild Bunch.
By the 1960s, Holden's films were commercial and critical flops. Even a reteaming with Audrey Hepburn in 1964's Paris When It Sizzles failed to reinvigorate his star power, a fact not helped by Holden going into rehab in the middle of production and forcing the film to create a narrative without him. He saw a brief resurgence at the end of the 1960s as he transitioned from good-looking leading man to grizzled older gentleman in Sam Peckinpah's hyper-violent The Wild Bunch and the 1974 all-star disaster flick The Towering Inferno. He secured a high-profile role in the Oscar-winning 1976 feature Network and went out on a high note in the 1981 Hollywood satire SOB. Towards the end of his life, Holden spent several years in Africa, working on a wildlife refuge with his girlfriend Stephanie Powers. After his death, Powers opened the William Holden Wildlife Foundation in Kenya. Holden died at the age of 63 on November 12, 1981, after falling while intoxicated. William Holden's demise was sad and tragic, but it in no way negates the superlative actor that he was. His smile captivated all of us, and we'll forever remember him as the pinnacle of Hollywood sophistication. After the break, guest Diana Bosch and I share our top three Bill Holden movies.
Well, hello, how are you?
Well, I'm fine. How are you? And I might add, who are you?
Who am I?
Am I supposed to know?
Come to think of it, no, you're not supposed to know.
Are you stranded?
My father was supposed to pick me up, but something must have happened.
Whoever your father is and whatever happened, I'll be eternally grateful. That is, if I can give you a lift.
You certainly can. You can drive me home.
Good. I'll get your bags. Where do you live?
Dezoris Lane.
Dezoris Lane? Say, that's where I live.
Really?
Sure. We must be neighbors. And if there's one thing I believe in, it's love thy neighbor.
Hello, listeners, and welcome back to our final William Holden episode. We thought about doing a couple things. We thought about talking about Network and the later Bill Holden period. We contemplated discussing Sabrina, and then we realized there are just so many great William Holden movies. Why settle on just one? And we'll discuss our top threes. So this is another top three episode. Hopefully you enjoy it. As always, I am joined once again by the lovely and amazing Diana Bosch. Diana, how are you?
I'm good. Thanks so much for having me again.
Oh, no problem. How is Holden 100 going this week?
It's going really well. I'm really happy and just thrilled that so many people have responded to my request to speak to them. And I didn't realize just how beloved William Holden is. And that's just really lovely. So if you go on my website, flickingoutblog.com, and on the homepage, there's a section called Holden 100, and you'll find everything that you need. There's audio interviews, there's photo galleries, blog posts. Enjoy.
Diane and I will both be at the TCM Classic Film Festival. By the time you're listening to this, we're probably already going to be there. They have two. It's two Holden movies.
Yeah, they do. And they're both being introduced by two of his former co-stars, Nancy Olsen and Nancy Kwan. And that's just going to be super exciting, especially Nancy Kwan, because she made her first film with William Holden. And as you know, she's a very pioneering Chinese actress. So I'm really excited for both of them.
talking about our top three William Holden movies. There's a lot of movies that I love, and then there's movies that I like William Holden in. Some of those don't always meet. I love Apartment for Peggy, but I wouldn't exactly recommend that as a William Holden movie. It's more of a Gene Crane movie. So I tried very hard to go against the grain as much as I have, and I'm sure a couple of these will be on Diana's list. So I try not to go with the biggies. I know we share one at least. Thankfully, we don't have a lot of overlap. We all did different movies. Of course, we'll have honorable mentions. So let's jump right into one of the movies that I really enjoyed. And it took me a while to come to that point. It's 1950's Born Yesterday. I own Born Yesterday. I've seen it several times. And I'd always liked it. I thought Billie Holiday was really good. But I never really fell in love with it. Or at least I didn't until the Turner Classic Movies Film Festival last year. You and I were there, and we both went and saw it. Seeing it with an audience, having my undivided attention focused on it, and getting to hear that dialogue, I realized how funny it was, how witty it was, how sharp it was. It's directed by George Cukor, but it has a script based on the play by Garson Kanin, which I've come to realize that I pretty much love everything Garson Kanin wrote. And it tells the story of Billy Dawn, played by Judy Holliday, who is this showgirl who's been the kept woman for this aspiring political mover and shaker, played by Broderick Crawford. He's taking her to Washington, D.C., but she's not sophisticated. She talks funny. She's dumb. He enlists the help of a newspaper man, played by William Holden, to essentially educate her. Of course, love blossoms between Judy Holliday and William Holden, because love blossoms every time William Holden's on set, I'm guessing. But I like that the movie champions independence, and not in intelligence, and not intelligence for women, but intelligence for people. The fact that we're coming into the 50s, this time of consumerism and relative economic prosperity, but that's no reason for us to get complacent. And that's no reason for us not to be intelligent. It's a very, very timely film for even today. They put glasses on William Holden, and that's supposed to make him look normal. It doesn't. It just makes him look hotter. But he's so romantic with Judy Holliday. He never denigrates her. He never treats her as stupid. He's very patient with her in a way that Broderick Crawford's character isn't. And you find out that Judy Holliday's character isn't dumb. She's just never been expected to be smart. So what does that leave her with? I love this movie, and I love the two of them. Diana, you've seen this. What do you think of it?
I have to agree with you, too, because it wasn't until the film festival that I just loved this movie. I was so excited to see it, but I also remembered that the reason why I would not watch it is because of Broderick Crawford, just the way he yells at her. Like, I would get uncomfortable and annoyed so quickly, but then William Holden is in the next frame, so it all works out. But what I love about the film is exactly the points that you hit on about independence and your intelligence. But also the thing about William Holden's character, which you nailed on the head, is that he never looks down on her. What I also love about Billie Dawn is that she doesn't rely on him. She gets the tools that she needs and realizes what situation she's in. He helps her along the way. He didn't completely change her. Like, she was able to find that herself.
It's a great comedy. It's a great romance. You should definitely watch it if you haven't already. Diana, what is your number three?
So my number three is a William Holden film that I revisited. It's been a while since I'd seen it, and I was just so moved by it. It's called Force of Arms. It's directed by Michael Curtiz. It's set in World War II. William Holden is on leave in Italy for a day and a half or something. And he meets Nancy Olsen, who's in the Women's Army Corps. She's a lieutenant. It's interesting because in the beginning, when William Holden's with his fellow soldiers, they're obviously on leave. So they're trying to get women. That's always uncomfortable for me, but it's a reality that was of the time. But when he meets Nancy Olsen, there's this genuine respect and interest of her as a human. And it's really beautiful to see, because what I love about their pairings is that they were always in equal playing fields. Nancy Olsen's characters were always independent in their four films together. They never needed William Holden. He just happened to be there, or she just happened to be there. It wasn't her only relevance is to be in love with him. In the film, their love just blossoms, and it was kind of reluctant because she has this past that I won't get into. It's just such a quiet film. It's directed by Michael Curtiz, and it's quiet in the way of story. It's not like super flashy or anything. There are some war sequences that are actually pretty impressive, but they deal with kind of the psychological aspects of war and romance and what this does to couples, especially that are serving together. I just thought it was so different from so many war films and just different for a William Holden movie, because he's like able to be a romantic leading man. But then you also see him struggling. There's a scene where he can't sleep because he's hearing bombs, similar to other films of his. There was just something so sweet with him and Nancy Olsen where it just feels natural. The Bridges of Toko Reed, Grace Kelly doesn't really work because who's going to think she's a dowdy housewife when it's Grace Kelly? There's just like little things like that. In Force of Arms, the ending is just so powerful and beautiful, and I won't spoil it. It's a really quiet and special film that doesn't get talked about enough, and I wanted to make sure that I was pointing out films that you may have not heard of because they don't get the same play. It's definitely one you should check out. It's one of my favorites because it's a really sweet movie, and to be a war movie and to focus on both the men and women and their effects is something that I really enjoy. That's why I love movies like Since You Went Away and So Proudly We Hail. Like, it just tells you a different side that you're not expecting.
There's a bunch of William Holden movies, of course, and he did one with my favorite leading lady, Veronica Lake, I Wanted Wings. It's a good movie. I don't know if he's necessarily the best part of it. I think Veronica Lake kind of overshadows him. But he's good in it. We'll talk honorable mentions in a bit. Some of his war movies are just really interesting from how he approached the characters that he was placed in.
Yeah, they weren't like hyper-masculine, like we have to win. They were just so nuanced. It humanized the experience.
My number two is actually your number two. So we're going to spend some time talking about it. 1954's Sabrina, also written and directed by Billy Wilder, who you might have remembered from our last episode when we talked about Sunset Boulevard. Sabrina is the immortal Cinderella story. Young woman is in love with a man. Of course, in this case, it is Audrey Hepburn's character who is in love with the character of David, played by William Holden. He's a playboy, Lothario, who doesn't give her the time of day. So what does she do? She decides to kill herself. But of course, that doesn't work as well as she plans. So instead, she's sent away to France to learn cooking and comes back looking like Audrey Hepburn again, only the Audrey Hepburn we know. And of course, this attracts David, but his brother Linus, played by Humphrey Bogart, doesn't want this relationship to happen because David is essentially going to be married off to a business competitor's daughter, played by Martha Heyer. So Linus's job is going to be to seduce Sabrina and hopefully split the couple up. There's some problems with it. It's not perfect. I think a lot of people that do bring up the issue with the movie is that Humphrey Bogart is significantly older, and he looks significantly older than Audrey Hepburn. He did not want to play the role. They wanted to get Cary Grant. They wanted somebody, obviously, that looked younger, and they couldn't do it, and Bogart was not happy. Of course, William Holden wasn't happy. They made him dye his hair platinum blonde, which A, only exacerbates the age difference between him and Humphrey Bogart, and it just looks ridiculous. But I love this movie. I think this movie is very cute. It's the Cinderella story and probably the best iteration of it. Sabrina's a little dramatic, but you still love her anyway. Between this and my number one, this is the William Holden I know. If this was the reality, he's that guy that's totally going to smile at you and get you into bed and then never call you again. And you're totally okay with it because it's William Holden. He's this playboy and he lives up to that. No, I buy it. I buy everything he's selling. But the third act and the Humphrey Bogart stuff, it never completely works for me. But I do love this movie. It's the costumes, how everybody interacts. I've not seen the remake. I know people like the remake just as much as they love the original. Maybe one day if I ever do the original, I'll do the remake as well. We'll compare. But I really enjoy this movie. Diana, what do you think about it?
I love Sabrina, and I do agree with you that the third act does drag So I think I saw Sabrina when I was like 10 or 11, and I was just so obsessed with it because it really hit me. I was really awkward and shy when I was younger. I still am. But like her transformation, I love the scene where she's writing the letter to her father from Paris. And she says, I've learned to live in the world and not stand by and watch. That was just such a big line for me. I still think about it because it's so beautiful and profound. And if you watch the beginning, you know, she's in the tree. She's not part of anything. So it was really nice. It's just such a great moment. Audrey Hepburn, yeah, I know. She just has a ponytail and then she cuts her hair and wears better clothes. But I just think the character works so well because she does change on her own. And then she realizes what's actually important. And, you know, whether it was David or Linus, I feel like regardless on that boat, she could have done whatever. And he just happened to be there. That's my takeaway. I know not everyone else feels that way. That's how I took it. I'm standing by it, okay?
Wait, I can see that.
It's a simple story, okay? She doesn't have to, like, burn her bra. Let's be real here. With William Holden, I don't think David Larrabee is a bad guy. I just think he's a guy who's used to having everything he's ever wanted, which is probably even more dangerous. He just doesn't think of life with feelings or anything. He just wants to have a good time and not be in Butte, Montana or whatever. Like, and I think William Holden does that so well because he's so charming and he's just out there to have fun. He's basically an idiot. And that's something that I think is really funny is because, yes, he's charming William Holden, but he's also not the smartest guy in the room, which is fun to see because every other picture he's in, it's like everything relies on him and his moral complexity and his decisions. Where in this movie, he could stand around and just do silly things and he gets away with it. Like when he's driving and he sees Sabrina and he like speeds up. It's like, why is he doing that? Or like the tennis court thing. It's just really funny because it's a different William Holden. And that's why I enjoy it. I don't think that he would have made a better Linus because I do like him in the David character. But I also love certain scenes with Humphrey Bogart, like the one where he goes up to his room and he opens the closet and his dad's there. And then he tries to put on his Yale like varsity jacket and he looks like that was from 50 years ago. I just think that part is so funny because it's written for the character to realize, yes, I'm older, but as an audience member, it's like, oh, Humphrey Bogart, like you totally know you shouldn't be in this movie. And so that part always cracks me up. He works to a certain point, but at the end, it doesn't sell me that him and Sabrina lived happily ever after, which is kind of fortunate. But I still love the movie because the music is great, the clothes, the dialogue is so funny. I'm still trying to figure out how to crack an egg with one hand. I love Sabrina. It's so much fun. It's a sweet movie. It's just one of those great black and white movies that, yeah, it may not be like good in retrospect. Like, you know, there's some things that are a little off, but it's just charming. Nothing wrong with that.
No, not at all. I would definitely agree. I think Billy Wilder's dialogue here is really great. The moon is reaching for me. That's a great line that I enjoy. I think we've proven that William Holden really worked well with Billy Wilder dialogue. He just has that snappy quickness to it that it requires. And I love the banter between him and Audrey Hepburn. And I know Diana gets a little flustered when I bring this up or when anybody does, but watching it, knowing their relationship off screen and how Audrey Hepburn gets maligned. The rumor is that she drove him to alcoholism, which I don't 100% agree with. But a lot of people bring that up. It's like, oh, you know, they worked so well together because they were obviously in love, which ended up looking horrible when they ended up reteaming together for Paris When It Sizzles, because by that point he was just a drunk. But I think they just have such a great chemistry together, obviously, but it shines through perfectly in this film. I always tell people, Paris When It Sizzles is about 15 good minutes, and then the rest of the movie you don't really need to see.
So it's a tough movie. I enjoy it, but I will say that I definitely have to like fast forward a few things and stuff, and you just kind of take it for what it is. It's so sad, obviously, knowing the backstory of him during that film, him having to go to rehab. But at the end of the day, like, you have to give him credit for at least completing something. He still worked and got it done. So
Sabrina has a lot of William Holden. peak sexy moments. There's also a couple in Paris when it sizzles. But I think William Holden is at peak dashing leading man in my number one, which is a film from 1953. It's probably the first William Holden movie I saw, which people are going to be like, I didn't watch any of the heavy hitters. I watched one that is considered niche, and it's Otto Preminger's The Moon is Blue. So The Moon is Blue has this really intriguing history in Hollywood. It was one of the first films I know that decided to go without a Hollywood Production Code seal of approval, which essentially was saying, we're unrated in 1953. That was because Preminger refused to make cuts to some of the content in this movie. You're probably wondering what is so scandalous about this movie that they decided that they were just going to throw caution to the wind and release it unrated. Well, it's the first use of the word virgin. There's a lot more that goes on, but that was a big sticking point. But it tells the story of a young woman played by Maggie McNamara. Her character's name is Patty O'Neill. They're in New York. She's at the Empire State Building, and she catches the eye of Donald Gresham, played by William Holden. I'm going to throw this out. None of this movie would work nowadays because Donald Gresham would just look like a creep. But he follows her up to the Empire State Building, and they have this really long, extended flirtation between the two of them before he eventually tells her, oh, the button on my jacket broke. Let's go down to my office and have it fixed. Oh, by the way, there's no one else here. Oh, by the way, you should come to dinner. Again, it's just a really weird series of events, but they go on this long, extended date that kind of plays out in real time. And at the same time, Donald's learning that Patty is very blunt. She openly asks if he's going to try to sleep with her. She mentions girls can be professional virgins. It's this really frank talk from a woman in 1953 that's aware of what this man in particular is going to try to do. She likes him anyway, in spite of it. And of course, in the same building as Dawn is David Slater, played by David Niven. His daughter dated William Holden's character. It's a really weird, incestuous relationship, but David Niven's character ends up getting involved, and then he falls for Patty, so there's this back-and-forth love triangle between the two of them. This is the first William Holden movie I saw, and there is a part in this film where Maggie McNamara's character is trying to sew a button onto a jacket, and he's standing behind her, and it is literally one of the sauciest scenes that I've ever seen in a film, or at least I had at that point. And I was just, like, mesmerized by him. William Holden is one of those characters I maintain would have chemistry with a fork. He oozes sexuality, and it works so well in this movie because, for once, he meets a woman who is his match. Yes, she's not experienced sexually, but she's intelligent, and she understands men and dates. And it's really funny. It's really frank for 1953, and I love all of the characters in it. Dan, have you seen this? I'm assuming you have.
I have, and I agree completely. I love Maggie McNamara. I know we've bonded over her Twilight Zone episode.
Yes.
I just think she's so underrated, and her story is so sad, but it's so nice to see her in this. And she got an Oscar nomination, which surprised me because of the whole bias with comedy. She's a little feisty thing, and it's great because, yeah, she's a virgin, but she turns the narrative of what we think of a virgin upside down. Like, she's very frank about why she is, and it's like, I'm up to your game. And so I love that, especially in the 50s. Like, I think that's such a great character. You still don't even see that now. They still go with the same trope. The movie, I was surprised by it too, because I think I saw it a few years back when TCM aired it, and now they're airing it a lot more. I was surprised by it because William Holden does look a little older than her, but it doesn't feel like...
It's not lecherous.
And you're right. He's one of those actors that he makes material work. He really does. Have you seen Damien the Omen? Like, he makes shit work. Pardon my French. So I love that about him. You could even say the same thing for Picnic, where people think he's too old for the part, but he really captures the whole complexity of Hal Carter in a way that he makes the age work for him, which I love.
Picnic is one of those movies where if you ever wanted to see just a smorgasbord of half-naked men, it is a great, great film.
I always walk away from that one and The Long Hot Summer feeling like I just, like one of those movies that looks so hot.
Yeah, you're sweaty, you're hot and bothered, and you're really not sure what's happened. It's worth it. What is your number one, Diana?
Some people will think it's a cop-out, but I have to go with Stalag 17. It's his Oscar-winning performance. Unfortunately, I've been surprised to learn that a lot of people don't remember Stalag 17, which surprises me because it's a very strong Billy Wilder script. And it's such a different POW movie because it's a comedy. And I recently rewatched it to talk about it. This movie is just so funny. I love it so much. But it's also super gripping. The premise, if you're not familiar with, is with a group of POWs in World War II. Stalag is German for barracks, so it follows them in Stalag 17. One of them, among them, is an informant for the Germans, but they're trying to figure out who it is. And immediately they think it's William Holden because Holden kind of keeps to himself and is very self-centered. He only cares about him and his livelihood in the barracks. Like, he does little gambling games and he runs a distillery. He's the only one who ever has food. Every time I watch it, even though I know who it is because I've seen it several times, I'm still sucked in because the supporting players are so good in it. It's a great ensemble. And they capture so many different aspects of men in war and struggling in this camp. You have your comedic relief, then you have your people who are like committed to the cause and being honorable. And then one character is suffering from PTSD. And there's just a lot to it. And it's a comedy. And I just think that's no easy feat. And it's the genius of Billy Wilder and William Holden, who in an unlikable part, you still find yourself rooting for him when you find out what happens. I'm not going to spoil it. You got to watch it. He's just a great character. Like, it's hard to hate William Holden, even when his characters are meant to be unlikable. He has a way of making you understand these characters.
Definitely. I think William Holden has one of those abilities to just really act off of anyone. I think in some of the honorable mentions we'll probably throw out there. I mean, I think people would be surprised to realize how many big stars he really worked opposite. It's a miracle that he's able to stand out because William Holden gets a lot of flack because he's so good looking. People just assume that he's there to be pretty. But at the same time, his characters are really finding a way to work around that fact that he's got a good looking face. And he's really able to be a chameleon opposite a lot of other big performers.
Totally.
Well, let's talk about some honorable mentions, because I think we actually have time to discuss them. I feel terrible. I did not get to watch nearly as many William Holden movies for his centennial month as I wanted to, but I did get to watch a couple of things. We'll get back to talking about I Wanted Wings, because you and I have different thoughts on that, but I want to throw out the stuff that I do like. I finally watched Dear Ruth, which is from 1947. Dear Ruth is a movie that is essentially the earliest form of catfishing, because you find out that there is this young girl, little feminist in the making, who is writing to a serviceman, played by William Holden, as her older sister. And he finally comes to town intent on marrying this woman that he's been talking to, only to find out that nobody wants to tell him that he's been talking to this, again, underage girl this entire time. Of course, the girl in question that is Ruth, it's played by Joan Caulfield. She's impossibly beautiful. Of course, romance blossoms. But I think it's a really funny, cheerful film that takes some unexpected directions. I really enjoyed it. I've mentioned Apartment for Peggy. Again, it's not quite William Holden's movie, but it is still very fun. I like his wartime stuff.
It's also surprisingly dark. It's such a hidden gem for a lot of reasons. I also love Dear Ruth. I'm glad you mentioned that and have seen it. But with Apartment for Peggy, if you ever have the time like I'm doing and watch the film chronologically, which I understand is hard to do and that's quite the commitment, but it's a great shift in the direction of him turning into like a leading man and finding himself, because that character has a lot of dimensions in it. It's a great movie. It's so sweet. I love Jean Crane too.
I'm a big fan of housing crisis movies, that subgenre in the 40s. Post-war, where you just got a lot of movies about how there were no houses for these people that were married and were coming back from war. It's a really interesting subgenre of films if you've ever really looked into it. I'd also throw out Rachel and the Stranger. I rewatched it. I didn't really care for it the first time I saw it. I rewatched it. I still don't 100% love it, but I definitely think you should watch it in terms of its gender politics and the fact that it stars essentially the two hottest men in classic Hollywood, which is William Holden and Robert Mitchum. William Holden's character is a widower. He needs somebody to keep and clean house. He has no interest in a woman as like a wife or a companion or a sexual object. He just really needs someone to like clean the house, take care of his kid, do the woman thing. And so he decides to hire a bond woman, which I'm assuming is essentially an indentured servant, played by Loretta Young. And she comes to live at his house. Yeah, they have this really acrimonious relationship because she doesn't do things right. And he's like, look, our relationship is strictly friends. Like, I don't want anything from you. Just keep house. And everything changes when Robert Mitchum's character shows up, who's William Holden's best friend. And Robert Mitchum's like, hey, girl, you're hot. This guy's not interested in you, so you should come with me. And then William Holden's character's like, no, wait a minute. Not the most gendered, politically correct film, but, I mean, it's two hot guys fighting over Loretta Young. You really can't do any better than that. So I definitely recommend that. And SOB, which is his last movie, a very bleak satire of Hollywood with Julie Andrews, Robert Preston's in it, a bunch of other celebrities that are there. William Holden's character is kind of playing like the aging Lothario. He's definitely older, but he's still able to pick up two hot hitchhikers, one of whom is played by Rosanna Arquette. It's a really just sharp commentary on Hollywood. If you thought that Sunset Boulevard was mean to silent film stars, SOB is really mean about how Hollywood forces women to get naked in order to change their image, will essentially prop up a dead person who's suicidal just to make a buck. It's a really bleak comedy. I recommend watching it with Inside Daisy Clover and just feeling really, really demoralized about Hollywood. Those are the golden movies that I recommend. Diana, what are some honorable mentions that almost made the cut that you feel people should seek out?
I'm very excited for honorable mentions. There's just so many great William Holden movies. I think he's awesome. So two lesser known movies that are hard to find that I really like. One is this movie called Young and Willing, which is hilarious and adorable. It's from 1943. It stars a very young William Holden, but also Susan Hayward and Eddie Bracken. They're part of this group of young actors that are living in this one girl's apartment that is being paid for by her father. It's basically like these young actors in New York trying to find their way. And it's really funny because it's very much the struggle of after college finding yourself. And I think it's still true for people that are young in New York to this day, which I don't know what that says, but there you have it. Holden's character is really funny because he's the young brooding one who takes this very seriously. And, you know, you have your Eddie Bracken as comic relief. When you first see William Holden, he's wearing an ascot and these really nice clothes. And his friends that he meets up with, they're like, oh, hey, how's it going? And he tells them, this is the only clothes I have because I can't afford to get my laundry back. It's really a charming little Paramount movie because you have all these young stars before their prime. And I always really like that. And he's just so great in it because he's doing a strict comedy and he's got some great facial expressions as he's trying to be like the straight man and everything around him is chaos. I love that because it's before you get to the sardonic William Holden that you know and love. Another movie I like is called The Dark Past. It's a film noir with Nina Foch and Lee J. Cobb.
I just watched that the other day, actually.
What do you think? It's weird, but it's short and, like, interesting.
I was really interested in seeing William Holden play as a villain, probably the only time I'd ever seen him play a villain.
Exactly.
But it's really a PSA for psychology.
Now, again, mind you, I feel like my picks aren't necessarily, like, my favorite movies. So, basically, my basis behind my honorable mentions, and I think this is ruining your question, but I just wanted to spotlight movies that I really enjoyed watching because they were just really interesting to me. So they're a mixture of things I think you should see, and then we're going to get into my favorites. And there's one that Kristen hates, but it's okay.
I'm okay with that.
This movie. Dark Past is really interesting because William Holden is like a villain, and he holds hostage this house that has Lee J. Cobb and his family. And Lee J. Cobb, it's funny because this is their second pairing. And the first time they were in a movie together, Lee J. Cobb played his dad because Lee J. Cobb was never a young man. It's a really interesting movie because William Holden has this horrible buzz cut haircut. He's like so angry. And then Lee J. Cobb is a respected psychologist and ends up doing this analysis of William Holden. And then it kind of just goes from there. It's just a really interesting noir. Interesting to see the Freudian theory come out in movies. I think there's probably more iterations, but Lady in the Dark is another example of that. It's just weird how like that was in a movie. I don't know. I wasn't expecting that. Is that a thing? Like, were you surprised too?
I don't really know what I expected from it. It's definitely got some good moments, but overall I was like, it's really a talk about like reforming criminals by getting into their minds. We have to like go into his past and we have to look at his childhood, but because of course all criminals had really bad childhood. I mean, it's very of its time, but I think if you want to see William Holden play something completely different, it's a great example.
Yeah, and I think he's good. He's a real tough guy. He really takes charge of the room. And I just really appreciate it for that because, again, it's a William Holden I hadn't seen before. But it's a very short movie. I think it's like an hour and 5 minutes or something, really short. So if you come across it, I think you should watch it. Performance that, again, shows you just, one, that the studio era, they made you do any kind of movie. That's why you have a singing Peter Lawford. And two, like, it's just a really interesting snapshot of the time period. And that to me is what I love about old movies. I'm not the only one who, when I see an Autovet, I get very excited because it's just something that doesn't exist anymore. And I just think that's really neat. Those are just two like recommendations, but like favorites, I gotta go with one is Picnic. I just can't get enough of it. Picnic is one of those movies that actually has grown on me. Like at the beginning, I really didn't like it, but now I just come to appreciate it so much more. And also like having read about the making of it and then just really appreciating Kim Novak. I really like it. If you've ever like Googled William Holden, those shirtless photos of him come up. What more do you need to watch Picnic?
You also get a shirtless Cliff Robertson in Picnic. William Holden gives you two for the price of one. It's just a cavalcade of riches.
His character is a lot different than you think at face value. Another one, I love this movie so much. It's Love is a Many Splendors Thing.
I don't hate that movie, but I don't like it.
Jennifer Jones plays an Asian, and it sucks. It's really hard to watch. However, Jennifer Jones looks beautiful, and it's such a great part for her. I think it's like one of her last great movies, even though it's hard for you to buy it. It's just very sad. Like, her performance is very sad to me because it's just such a sad character, not that I don't think she was bad in it. I think she does a great job. But I just think William Holden is so good at just being straight up romantic. Yeah, they're having an affair, but he just seems so happy with her. He just breaks my heart. And I also saw this movie when I was super young, so I didn't get. I knew she wasn't an Asian woman. You could just tell. But I didn't really like think about how offensive that was. So it just went over my head. Wasn't woke then. Don't hate me.
Oh, no. We can't all be blamed for the sins of our classic film love. No judgment.
It's a snapshot of the time. But here's the thing. Like, for those problems in Love is a Many Splendored Thing, 20th Century Fox was really good at exploring racism. They did it with Gentleman's Agreement. And they do it here in Love is a Many Splendored Thing. It's in Hong Kong in the 1940s, and when William Holden and Jennifer Jones are having this affair, people know about it, and they are so mean to Jennifer Jones. She loses her job eventually. I think that's really interesting because the movie, for its big fault of its leading actress, there actually are other Asians in the movie. Thankfully, they gave them some job. Sadly, Hollywood, why do you got to do this? But it does tell the story of really important themes that weren't touched on as much in Hollywood. It's such a hard movie. And for me, I love that, like, when I post about it, people have an open conversation. They aren't like, which is nice because I do think it deserves to be talked about. And it was also filmed on location in Hong Kong, which is a big step for, I think it was 1954. So there was a lot going for it there. Unfortunately, with the lead, it's tough. I love it. I just think it's a beautiful movie because of the way it's shot. It's in CinemaScope, and it's so, like, you get these beautiful shots of Hong Kong. And I just think William Holden's so great in it. He's tan. He looks beautiful. Like, I just buy all his bad dialogue. Like, he just has such romantic dialogue. I actually watch this movie a lot more than other William Holden movies because I just fall in love with it. Because he's so romantic. It's just so sweet.
We did want to talk before we close things out about I Wanted Wings. I Wanted Wings is from 1941. It tells the story of three servicemen as they're being recruited into the Army Air Corps. So you have a playboy played by Ray Milland, an average guy played by William Holden, and there's like a college jock, I think that's the Wayne Morris character. And they all have different issues and different things happen as they are working their way into getting in a plane and doing Air Force things. But Holden's storyline is the one that the love plot line, because he is in love with a woman named Sally Vaughn, played by Veronica Lake, who threw him over because he didn't make a lot of money. And then she starts seeing Ray Milland's character, but then she keeps going back to Al because of circumstances that happen. Really, I just love Veronica Lake in this movie, but this is one of many movies. I think you called this, he wasn't a fan of playing Smiling Jim. He is this average Joe auto mechanic, sad sack, doesn't get the girl. I never buy that because he looks like William Holden, even in some of his early 40s films, where he's supposed to be playing like this average kid that can't get a girl. He looks like William Holden. I'm sorry. It's just, it never is believable. But why do you hate I Wanted Wings, Diana? Explain yourself.
Okay, maybe I was being too harsh. It's not that I hate I Wanted Wings, because, again, William Holden and Veronica Lake are awesome in this movie. She is so good at being, like, conniving and yet very charming. And I also love any movie that Veronica Lake sings in, or if she dubs in, whatever.
Yep.
I think she's great. She's so beautiful. She's one of my favorites, too. I like William Holden in it. This is a movie I've been wanting to see for so long, and I finally was able to find it recently, and I was kind of disappointed. The problem is, I just think the script turns Veronica Lake into this ridiculous woman towards the end, where it gets to, like, she's in the plane. That part just really made me upset. Really unnecessary. I mean, I just defended Love is a Many Splendid Thing. I'm very lax on my movie watching. I'm like, okay, well, that's never going to happen in a movie. But this one just made me mad because I feel like they just made her ridiculous. Whereas up until then, she had the upper hand on everyone. So that's kind of what made me upset. And also, I hate movies where Ray Milland is a jerk. I love Ray Milland, and he's such a jerk in this one. He was such a jerk in Lady in the Dark, and when he's a jerk, I just can't watch him. I get really upset.
I refer to Ray Milland as Discount James Mason, and that's how I feel about him. That's how I'm always going to feel about him. I'm sorry.
Dang, that's hard.
Maybe one day we'll do a Ray Milland month, and I'll try to figure out why I just don't like him that much.
Have you ever seen Reap the Wild Wind?
I have. I had to watch
Again,
that for Robert Preston.
In that one.
Yep.
He's such a jerk.
In Technicolor, of all things. Listeners, you can send me your favorite William Holden movies or tell me I'm wrong about Ray Milland or what have you. You can email them to me at ticklishbiz@gmail.com and I will read them on a future episode. Once again, I'd like to thank Diana Bosch for joining me this entire month to celebrate William Holden. Diana, what's in the pipeline for you on your website? Where can fans find and get in touch with you?
You can get in touch with me on Twitter. It's @thedameupstairs. And then my website is flickingoutblog.com.
And you can find all the Holden 100 stuff on her website and on her Twitter. You have Instagram, right?
I do. It's flicking, FLICKIN_out.
So you can get all your William Holden stuff there. I consider Diana to be the William Holden expert that I know. So definitely check her out.
That's going to close out this edition of Ticklish Business. You can listen to Ticklish Business a variety of different ways, either directly at ticklishbusiness.podbean.com, via Stitcher Radio and Player FM, or on iTunes. If you listen via iTunes, though, please consider helping the podcast out by leaving a rating. As always, you can contact me directly with questions, comments, suggestions to ticklishbiz, that's B-I-Z, at gmail.com, or visit me at my official website where I discuss classic films regularly, journeysinclassicfilm.com. If you head over to the website now, you can read my TCM Classic Film Festival adventures, as well as a bunch of reviews and all sorts of extra content that's going to be coming up in the next few days. The podcast is also on Twitter at ticklish_biz. Want to learn more about upcoming episodes or hear exclusive content before anyone else? Then consider supporting Ticklish Business via Patreon. I have a wealth of amazing perks, and all your donations go right back into making Ticklish Business the premier classic film podcast that it is. Right now, you can listen to my TCM On Location's tour guide interview with Sarah Louise Lilly. You'll also be able to hear my TCM Classic Film Festival audio up there first, as well as my interview with Michael Curtiz biographer Alan K. Rohde. So be sure to get in on that if you are interested. Also, anyone who becomes a patron in the month of May is eligible for a secret prize from the Ticklish Biz Vault. I'm just going to keep reiterating this because I'd really like to give a prize to somebody. So if you aren't already a patron, consider it if you'd like to win a prize. If you're interested in becoming a patron, just head over to patreon.com/ticklishbiz. Want to learn more about the stars turning 100 this year? Well, if you're a member of TCM's exclusive fan club TCM Backlot, you can read my year-long series Centennial Celebrations about the stars spotlighted during this year. I discuss films and information that you won't hear on the show, so be sure to head over there if you're a TCM Backlot member. But next time, the month of May, sees us looking at actor John Dahl, an actor I don't really know a whole lot about. And I'm going to be joined by Lauren Humphreys Brooks all month. And we're going to start things off by looking at the 1948 Alfred Hitchcock film, Rope. Till next time.